Chapter 18. Emergence. In this chapter, spooky action at a distance. Is the universe a living hologram? Making space where none was before. Pulling threads from the space-time fabric. This chapter focuses on the idea that space and time, among the most fundamental things you can think of, are actually the product of something still simpler. Some basic ingredients that rise above concepts of place and moment. Those ingredients play off one another and produce something that wasn't there at the outset. Emerging ideas. One of the most annoying phrases in our language is, make time for it. If only we could. Short of creating a black hole inside of which a new region of space-time might bud off, we're stuck with the time we have. All we can do is rob it from Peter to linger on the phone with Paul. If bosses, teachers, and parking attendants recognized these trade-offs, the world would be a happier place. For quantum gravity theorists, though, making time is a rallying cry. Their ultimate goal is to figure out where the notion of space-time comes from. Is it a foundational concept, incapable of further explanation? Or is it emergent, assembled from something still deeper? It's hard even to imagine what that something could be. How can we think of things when there's no place they could be? How do they assemble, if assembly is a process occurring in time? Yet the task is no different in kind from how any phenomenon emerges from what lies below it. Quarks interact to produce protons, protons to produce atomic nuclei, atoms to produce molecules, and so on until we get creatures that want it all done yesterday. Along the way, new qualities emerge that weren't obvious in the original building blocks. So it may be with space and time. The candidate quantum theories of gravity are all very far from achieving this goal. Every effort to step outside of space and time presumes some aspect of it. It's hard to break free altogether, but physicists have loosened a few of the restraints. The slipperiness of the concept of distance, discussed in Chapter 16, hints at how space-time might emerge from shenanigans in the microscopic realm. Strings seem inseparable from the space they reside in. If we squeeze down a cylinder, the string residing on it can grow as though it makes room for itself. The way the string winds around the cylinder is indistinguishable from motion in a new dimension of space, one that isn't explicitly included in the equations, but materializes of its own accord. Small space, large space. To a string, it's six of one and half a dozen of the other. If space were foundational, the concept of distance wouldn't be so flighty. In the loop. One does not really need space-time anymore. One just needs a two-dimensional field theory describing the propagation of strings. And perhaps more fatefully still, one does not have space-time anymore, except to the extent that one can extract it from a two-dimensional field theory. Space-time seems destined to turn out to be only an approximate, derived notion. Edward Witten, Institute for Advanced Study. In loop gravity and Bucky Space 2, microscopic space-time looks nothing like the macroscopic sort. In these theories, the space-time we observe is a quantum average of possible geometries on fine scales. How our macroscopic space-time emerges is still an open question. But Bucky space has found an important condition. The four dimensions of space and time emerge from primitive tidbits of space-time only if the tidbits are forced to respect cause-effect relations. Ensuring that cause and effect remain distinct seems part of the conceptual underpinnings of space-time. Reach out and touch someone. In the traditional view of space, one of its essential properties is what physicists call locality. Locality means that each point in space and time is an individual with an independent existence. Points directly affect only the points they directly touch. For something to move from one place to another, it needs to cross through every point in between, which unavoidably takes time. It's fun to think about leapfrogging across space-time using psychic powers or hyperspace jumps, but we must be careful what we wish for. Locality ensures that space is our protective moat. Violent events transpire all over the universe, and the intervening abyss attenuates their effects. Without locality, the world would go haywire. Yelling at your TV set really might change the outcome of the game. Space invaders might flit across the galaxy, bop you on the head, and flit back before you know what hit you. Depending on your own speed, an instantaneous influence could look like one going back in time, so cause and effect would get muddled. General relativity and modern quantum theory have elements of non-locality, but the effects are contained. Quantum theory is widely regarded as non-local. Two particles can remain blood brothers however far apart they are. Conversely, two neighboring particles that lack this tight bond might be oblivious to each other. Spatial position hardly matters at all. Einstein called it spooky action at a distance. Yet the particles' relationship is private. Space invaders couldn't use it for their own nefarious ends. As for general relativity, the malleability of space-time makes individual points impossible to identify definitively. When we try to make observations at specific points, we run into conundrums such as the problem of frozen time. Measurable quantities are non-local. They can't describe points, only regions. Fortunately, this non-locality, like the quantum sort, doesn't expose our planet to space invaders. Gravity is typically so weak that space-time has a nearly fixed shape and provides a perfectly adequate scaffolding for pinpointing events. Another threat to locality in general relativity is wormholes. But in the absence of special quantum effects that might well prove impossible, wormholes collapse of their own accord. As these two theories collide in a quantum theory of gravity, non-locality intrudes more forcefully. All the leading approaches to quantum gravity involve some degree of non-locality. Distance ceases to matter when it's short enough. We can't even define it anymore. The fraying of locality, such a basic property of space, suggests that space itself unravels. When something is non-local, it has no position. It somehow sits outside space. And if you want to explain what space really is, that's precisely what you want. Something that is beyond it. The holographic principle. It's not surprising that locality breaks down on very fine scales. Things are weird down there. This is just one more instance of weirdness to add to the list. What's more startling is that locality could also give way on large scales. To see why that might happen, let's consider a thought experiment involving something we don't normally associate with quantum gravity, computer memory chips. Today's chips use nanometer-scale transistors to store data bits. As engineers continue to shrink chips down, they might use atoms or even subatomic particles and make them three-dimensional rather than flat silicon wafers. Ultimately, engineers of the far future might exploit strings or whatever other building blocks are the tiniest possible. If locality holds, the total information capacity is proportional to the volume of material. The whole is just the sum of its parts. If you visit the computer superstore of the future, a salesperson, sales cyborg, or depending on how optimistic you are about humanity's future, sales cockroach, would sell you 8 string-based memory cards, advising you to slot them into your computer for 8 times as much data as a single card. But that doesn't give gravity its due. Each data bit corresponds to a certain amount of energy stored in the chip. So a lot of bits entails a lot of energy, which generates a strong gravitational field. If you try to pack too much data into the chip, gravity becomes strong enough to create a black hole, giving new meaning to a computer crash. If you try to add capacity by stacking 8 cards, arrayed in a cube, 2 on a side, the force of gravity intensifies, so you can store only 4 times as much data before triggering the black hole. Each card can hold half as much data as it did on its own. The total capacity goes up with the surface area rather than the volume. In short, when gravity is strong, the whole is less than the sum of its parts. which goes against what we expect from the concept of locality. This violation of locality can occur on any scale. It is not confined to the microscopic. Down the memory hole. The fact that information storage capacity is proportional to area rather than volume is perplexing and profound, so let's look at it again in more detail. It all has to do with black holes. The processes that govern them set the limit to the information content of more mundane objects. Black holes, like anything else, can store information. We know this because they not only suck in matter but also glow like a hot coal. For an ordinary object, heat is associated with molecular motion, and although physicists don't know what a black hole's molecules, its basic constituents, are, the mere existence of these molecules implies that the hole encodes information. The number of gigabytes in a black hole depends on the number of possible molecular arrangements, a quantity known as entropy. Definition: entropy is a measure of the number of possible ways molecules in a substance can be arranged for a given amount of energy. To calculate the amount of entropy, physicists surmise the molecular properties from how the black hole radiates. When a black hole devours matter and increases in mass, it increases in radius, yet decreases in temperature. A bigger hole is heavier but cooler. The gravitational forces on the surface, which determine the temperature, are weaker. Temperature is essentially the average energy per molecule. As a hole grows, its total energy goes up, while the average energy of its putative molecules goes down. Eventually, as a hole grows, its total energy is being spread out over a large number of molecules, leaving each with less. It turns out that the number of molecules must scale up with radius squared, that is, with area. The number of molecules, in turn, determines the information storage capacity of the whole. Quantum leap. Here's a little more of the mathematical reasoning. As a rule of thumb, both energy and entropy increase with the temperature of an object, but entropy increases one notch more slowly. When energy increases with the fourth power of temperature, entropy increases with only the third power. When energy increases with the first power of temperature, entropy increases with, approximately, the zero power. In a black hole, energy increases with the negative one power of temperature, so entropy must increase with the negative two power. Converting temperature to radius, entropy must increase with the second power of radius, that is, with area. If area limits the information content of a black hole, it must limit the information content of anything, since anything can be crunched into a black hole. By generalizing the definition of area, the limit applies even to expanding objects which don't have a fixed area in space. That includes our universe as a whole. Quantitatively, each Planck area, square Planck length, accounts for about 1 bit of data. Those mysterious black hole molecules, whatever they may be, must be Planckian in scale, which is further confirmation that quantum gravity governs them. 1 bit per Planck area is an awful lot of information for any decent-sized body. Even if we tallied up the properties, positions, and velocities of every particle in an ordinary body, it wouldn't come close to maxing out this limit. Even so, the limit is a huge comedown from what locality implies. Suppose that standard quantum theory, which assumes locality, says an object is so complicated that we'd have to commandeer the entire internet, about an exabyte of data, to store its blueprint. The area information limit says a single 100 gigabyte hard drive would do. That's a factor of 10 million less. For larger objects, the factor is even greater. Our universe as a whole can store roughly a Google 10 to the 100th power bits, a factor of about 10 to the 60th power less than locality would imply. Adventures on the holodeck. Because the assumption of locality misses the mark by a huge factor, the points that make up space-time must not be independent, even in principle. They're interconnected by a cat's cradle of gravitational forces, so that information content depends on area rather than volume. You could store everything there is to know about an object on its surface. Theoretically, not only can you judge a book by its cover, but you can also read it by its cover. The book jacket carries a subtle imprint of every word. Physicists call this concept the holographic principle, by analogy to a hologram, which stores a full 3D scene on a flat sheet of film. Definition: a hologram is a special type of photograph that captures an entire 3D scene so that it can be viewed from various angles. The holographic principle holds that the amount of information in a region is proportional not to its volume, but to the area of its boundary. The trick of a hologram is non-locality. It stores the image not as splotches of pigment corresponding to individual objects in the scene, but as a wave pattern which spreads out each object across the whole film so they're all overlapping. When you illuminate the hologram, you reconstruct the light waves. A third dimension that isn't really there emerges from the way the information is stored on the hologram. Similarly, one of the dimensions in space may not be fundamental, but could emerge from what happens in a lower dimensional space. What we perceive as widely separated objects may fall right on top of one another in that space, and something besides spatial separation keeps them from interacting. Stringy holography. Some married couples can sit at the same table with each other, but might as well be in different time zones. Lovey-dovey couples can be in different time zones, yet feel they could touch each other. Proximity is a matter of perspective. This maxim underlies the most fully developed account of what holography tells us about space and time. The idea is to exploit the concept of duality, the fact that strings can behave in two different yet completely equivalent ways. Duality has become string theorists' Gerber multi-tool, packed with so many functions they're still figuring it out. Using it, theorists have shown that almost everything that seems fundamental isn't. Distance, symmetry, and now space-time itself. Duality can match up entire universes so that whatever happens in one has a counterpart in the other. Those universes can have different numbers of dimensions, just as a flat hologram is equivalent to a 3D scene. The classic case, put forward in 1997 by Juan Maldacena, now at the Institute for Advanced Study, in what became the single most influential theoretical physics paper of the 90s, pairs a universe with five dimensions of space and time and a 4D universe that forms its outer boundary, like an apple and its skin. The 5D interior universe is a normal one, at least by string theory standards. It's filled with strings that exert gravitational forces on one another. The 4D boundary universe is filled with quantum particles that don't exert gravity. These particles are essentially the standard model on steroids. Instead of one, two, or three forms of charge, such as electric charge or quark color, the particles can have billions or more. This extra complexity makes up for the lack of gravity and ensures that the two universes behave in the same way. The larger the interior space-time, the more types of charge the boundary universe needs. Because the interior has gravity and the boundary has only quantum forces, which are based on so-called gauge symmetries, the duality between the two universes is known as gravity-gauge duality. Definition: gravity-gauge duality is the equivalence of a universe with gravity to a lower-dimensional universe without gravity. Since 1997, string theorists have found other universes that match up with each other, so they suspect it's a general principle. To be fair, though, they have yet to prove it, and some physicists are still skeptical. Although the two universes are technically equivalent, string theorists commonly think of the boundary universe as primary. A region in the interior has a limited amount of information because it's governed by processes on the boundary, which has one dimension fewer. The boundary processes themselves are purely local. No gravity gets in the way because gravity is itself derivative. The duality also hints at how space can arise from spacelessness. In Chapter 6, I explained how processes occurring at different size scales are almost independent of one another. Each scale directly affects only the next bigger one. The situation is like the parable of the kingdom and the nail. The nail affected the horseshoe, which affected the horse, then the rider, then the battle, then the kingdom. For an influence to move between widely separated scales, it must cross through every scale in between. Quantum leap. Physicists working on loop gravity and causal sets have a different take on the holographic principle. They think of it as a limit not on the information content of space, but on how much of that information can get through to us when we conduct observations. This independence of scales looks just like the independence of points in space. The gravity gauge duality takes this resemblance literally. Two particles, residing at the same location in the boundary universe, barely interact if they have different energies. Their counterparts are strings at two different locations inside the interior universe. Particles could rub shoulders on the boundary while their stringy avatars are light years apart in the interior. Distance may be a grand illusion, which perhaps offers some consolation to the separated lovers of the world. Although just one dimension emerges, gravity gauge duality has become the template for understanding, in general, how space and even time might emerge. For instance, quantum particles might initially interact in a way that, like a badly lit hologram, doesn't give rise to an interior universe. Gradually, though, they start behaving in a way that mimics the additional dimension. Space or time arises, and you get the same "ooh" sensation as when you first see a hologram pop out at you. Even this idea, though, presumes that time operates on the boundary. String theorists have yet to create space and time completely from scratch. Seeing spooky action? No one has yet detected any non-local transmission of information. In the right situation, though, locality might get ratty and let us catch a glimpse of the underlying non-locality. Some theorists think strings that are in contact on the boundary, yet far apart in the interior, might be able to communicate with one another, perhaps explaining the mysteries of black holes, or even the non-locality of standard quantum theory. In the leading alternative theories, loop gravity, Bucky space, and causal sets, points in the microscopic space-time connect only to their nearest neighbors. But points that are neighbors on the connect-the-dots figures of these theories may be far apart in space-time, like parts of a sewing pattern that are next to each other on the page, yet far apart on the body. If you don't know what you're doing, you might end up with threads connecting the cuff to the collar. Lee Smolin and Fotini Markopoulou of the Perimeter Institute call this disordered locality. Such straggly connections are presumably very rare, but space is big, so the absolute number of them could be enormous. They act like miniature wormholes and might allow forces to leak from one part of space to another, with subtle effects on cosmology and quantum theory. All the features of candidate quantum gravity theories discussed in this part of the book, extra dimensions, multiple universes, foamy space-time, symmetries of seemingly different particles, types, and non-locality, have a trace of magic about them. Some people might misinterpret this to mean that physics proves the existence of miracles. In fact, these features are well hidden from us and have to be for our own good health. What makes the everyday world magical, a place just right for us, is not that we could stick our arm into an extra dimension or leap across space with a single bound. It's that we can't. The least you need to know. Space and time may be derivative concepts. The so-called holographic principle is one piece of evidence for this. In string theory, the holographic principle reflects a connection known as gravity gauge duality, which allows space to emerge from spacelessness. Space may be riddled with non-local connections that tie together far-flung points. These connections may become apparent in extreme situations, such as black holes.